Hello and welcome to Joey 2's video gaming podcast with me, Joe. And Min. Thank you. Fucking hell. Oh, it's got to be such a chore, hasn't it? I don't know why it's got to be such a chore every time, but apparently it does. Okay. So this is Joey 2's video gaming podcast, as I said. Just in case you are a new listener and you don't understand our incredibly complicated premise, Joey 2 is our cat. He's a very ugly black cat with flared nostrils and a persistent smell, would you say?
sometimes it's mild, sometimes it's a bit more,
but it is persistent,
aggressive.
I think you're gonna say it is always persistent. And and Joey 2 is massively into video games, so myself, Joe and Min, we play video games and we complete them, and then we pitch them to Joey 2 and he gives his final judgment on it. So just to clarify, it's not really our podcast, it's Joey 2's podcast. He will give his final judgment. Maisie is also a cat, and is that me? Oh no, that's Joey. Okay, so we're currently in bed as we record this. We thought we'd record a podcast in bed, because why not, lying down comfortable. It's good to be horizontal every now and then, but it does mean our cats might take advantage of the situation, because they're a little bit confused about why there is a laptop on the bed and a bit agitated. But we'll see how it goes, shall we?
Yeah.
Now, today's podcast, listener, is all about The Messenger, which is a game that we tried because it was on Game Pass, didn't really know anything about, and we really, really liked it. What do you say?
I think when we first saw the little snippet. The little thing on Xbox, we kind of passed by it and went, it looks okay.
Yeah.
Definitely not something that we'd buy, because we're cheap.
Yeah, well, also, it's like, it's always a bit of a risk buying a game when you don't know anything about it.
We tend to not buy games that we're not 100% sure of, especially games like this. So when we saw it on Game Pass, which is why Game Pass is so bloody brilliant. Like, there's been so many games. We haven't had an Xbox for ages, but there's been quite a lot of games that we've played on a whim, because it's been on Game Pass, or we've seen that it's leaving Game Pass soon.
Yeah.
And then ended up really loving, and then it's opened our mind up to other kinds of games that are similar. So
yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Game Pass.
And this is a game that we sort of thought, I think we watched a trailer for it and we thought, it looks like it's got some cool mechanics.
Yeah.
I ended up really, really liking it, especially surprising for me, because it's really not my kind of game.
I think I played these kind of games more than you all did.
Yeah. Well, so what kind of game is it, Min? How would you describe it?
I guess platformy.
So
Metroidvania-y.
Well, so it's a 2D side-scrolling action platformer in the style of the old school Ninja Gaiden games.
Yeah.
Gaiden? Is it Gaiden or Gaiden? Gaiden. The old school Ninja Gaiden games, Castlevania for the SNES and all that kind of stuff. Or I think we both grew up with Mega Drives.
Yeah, and I'd say it has it's not a massive puzzly game, but it does have some elements.
Yeah, it's got puzzles as well, yeah. So it's like Strider, or like you kept saying it was like Strider.
Definitely. Yeah. I got proper Strider vibes from it.
So it's a 2D side-scrolling sort of affair, and you start off, it's called The Messenger, and it starts off, and you are sort of like a rookie ninja. You look like a ninja.
Yeah, I think the joke is that you've got a clan and you're always late, and you're kind of the amateur who doesn't take it seriously and doesn't really have much potential.
So you the game begins, and you're attending your morning rituals or something, when a huge demon who looks like he could be a subject of a £600 life episode.
With
several heads and things, turns up, and not that people on £600 life tend to have several heads. They have several growths that look like heads, but I wouldn't describe them as heads.
Especially when they rarely lose the weight and they have the excess skin, that's what it looked like.
Anyway, well, good on them for losing the weight.
Yeah, but that's what it looked like.
So the Demon King turns up and begins to attack and pretty much kills everyone in the ninja clan, at which point the sort of head ninja says, we're waiting for the hero from the west, is it? The guardian hero from the west?
Yeah.
He's meant to show up. Why hasn't it happened? Why hasn't it shown up? At that point, someone shows up who you assume is the hero from the west, and he gives you a scroll. And he says, listen, I need you to deliver this scroll to the top of that mountain over there. Basically, there's a mountain over there. You need to deliver the scroll to the top of that mountain to get help. That's what needs to happen. So you take the scroll, which is why the game is called The Messenger, because you've been given this scroll, and you have to deliver it to the top of this tower. And at first, the game is like sort of like typical of sort of 2D side-scrolling action games.
Definitely.
You have a sort of sword slash, and that's pretty much it. It introduces
and a jump.
It introduces a mechanic early on, which is called a cloud jump, which is where you can hit if you jump and then hit something in midair. So if there's like an object in midair that you hit, you can then jump again. So quite early on, the puzzles kind of are based around hitting and then jumping and then hitting and then jumping. But one thing the game does really well is sort of steadily introducing new mechanics.
That you definitely have to use.
Yeah, that you really use, that just kind of open the gameplay. So one of the first things you get is the ability to climb up walls. So certain walls you can cling to and then climb up using, like, I guess, like, ninja claws? Is that the idea of it?
Yeah.
And then later on you get, like, a rope... Well, he calls it a rope dart. And you say, like... And you, when the person gives it to you, they says, oh, here's a rope dart. And the character says, oh, what does a rope dart do? He goes, oh, you'll find out. We'll probably end up calling it a grappling hook anyway. Because it's basically just a grappling hook.
Yeah.
So you set off on this journey, and the first thing that you find is these, like, portals that lead to this kind of, like... like sort of like space shop. It's like a shop that seems to be in the void of time and space.
Yeah.
What did you think of the shopkeeper man?
He or she was adorable.
She, yeah.
So they all wear these blue little robes.
So the shopkeepers, when you go into these void of time and space shops, are like wearing these blue robes.
And you can't see the face. They've just got like a glint of a light for their eyes, and some of them are short and some of them are like tall. But the shopkeeper in particular was really charming because. Yeah. We didn't do this from the beginning, but you can actually get upgrades, but you can have a chat as well.
Yeah.
And I just presumed that the chats were to sort of give you a hint on if you were stuck on where to go. But it turns out that if you have a chat with him in each area, he'll give you a story.
Yeah.
And the stories are actually hilarious.
Yeah, so he'll give you like a little fable.
Yeah.
And it'll seem like the fable's got like a moral, but then it'll end really weirdly.
But yeah, I mean, it was hilarious. And we did it at the end, I think, on a whim.
Yeah.
And then really regretted not doing it.
Yeah, because one thing that the game, that you notice about the game pretty soon on, because normally with these kind of games, it's kind of like, there's like a sort of brief framing narrative, and then really it's just about the gameplay. And
yeah.
This game was actually really well written.
The dialogue was
genuinely like funnier and more engaging than it had any right to be.
Definitely.
It didn't really need to be, and yet it was really engaging and funny all the way through.
Definitely. They all had, they're all pretty similar looking, aside from, you know, the shape and the size of him.
The blue,
but,
blue guys in the blue.
But they all
course,
definitely, yeah, because there was a few blue guys in the robes.
Yeah.
But they all had distinct characteristics and personalities. And the one in the shop was so adorable. And, he sold you upgrades, which are really handy for the game, by the way. You collect a little, like,
yeah, so you
diamond orbs,
diamond
that's it.
Crystals and throughout the levels.
And if you save up enough, you can buy upgrades from him. But, was he the one that kept going on about doing the thing?
No, that was a different one.
Oh, well there's another one that says that he wants to do the thing, which we'll talk about later. But the shopkeeper was so adorable.
So yeah, and I don't want to, I'm sort of like, even though if you are listening to this podcast, I imagine you've probably played the game, because, we are going to spoil stuff. But I kind of don't want to give away all the secrets, because there is quite a lot of little funny little secrets and Easter eggs in the game.
If you come onto a podcast called The Messenger,
I mean, like, the cabinet, for example. Like, I don't really want to explain, because, you know what I mean? Like, everything about it. But, like, there's a cabinet in the shopkeeper's shop that if you keep messing with, very funny things happen. So I'd recommend doing that.
That was definitely designed for people like me, because I feel like you would just be like, fuck it, and leave.
Yeah, Min likes to antagonise people.
I genuinely do.
So if you give her a chance to antagonise someone...
Well, the moment he said, please don't touch that, I was like, well, now I want to touch it.
Well, now I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes touching it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just really well written, and I just like how they commit to things.
So, in typical sort of Game of this fashion, you start off in an area. I think the first area is called Autumn Hills, and it's kind of like all autumn-themed, and... there's enemies that, that fire projectiles at you and things like that. First thing I noticed about this first area, I mean, was the music is so good.
Yeah, you know what? The music in general is really good, but I think that one was your most favourite. And the thing about these kind of games is you do die a lot, because a lot of it is about learning the patterns of the enemies and the little tricks that are going to happen and the disappearing ledges and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when you've got music on a loop that you know 100% that you're going to be listening to over and over again, it has to be good. And that's usually not the case for these kind of games.
No.
Apart from Castlevania. But I really, really like the music. Like, there wasn't really many times where we put it on silent and listened to a podcast or anything, because the music was quite good.
Yeah, the music was really good. And it was, like, always satisfying to hear.
Yeah.
Like you say, even though Like, yeah, so as Min said, this game is very difficult. I don't think... Well, we'll get into difficulty in a little bit, but it is a difficult game, and you are going to die. It's like one of those games where... Like, the way we were playing it, we were sort of passing it back and forth, death to death. So I'd play it till I died, then I'd pass it to Min, she'd play it till she died, and she'd pass it to me. And, like, almost like when you first get to a new area, you think, okay, this first run through is a reconnaissance run. I'm going to die. I'll just see how far I can get, have a look at the obstacles and things like that. And then when you have a go, you'll be able to then have a better chance of it because you will have seen me trying to get through it already.
Yeah, and I think the way we were playing it really helped as well because when it was your go.
Yeah.
I could watch you do something that maybe I didn't pick up on, and then you could watch me do something that might help you in your run. But yeah, in them kind of games, you have to expect to die. Like, yeah. that is part of the game, unless you know it back to front, which we didn't. So I'm really grateful that the music was, for the most part, good, and the way it looped as well was really nice.
Yeah, no, it was. It was like it was seamless. Like, it was seamless. Often, I think, what game were we playing? We were playing something the other day where I said obnoxious loop. Where it was Final Fantasy VIII.
Yes, fact. It was.
Yeah, so in the music in Ultimisha's Castle, if you've regular listeners, will also have listened to Final Fantasy VIII. I doubt it because that podcast has two listeners at the moment, and one of them is me.
Yes.
So the chances of you having heard that podcast are very slim. But we have already done a podcast about Final Fantasy VIII Remastered, so you can find it on this feed and listen to it. But the music in Ultimisha's Castle looped so badly, and it's like a real sort of like point where it finishes. And starts again, whereas this music, it was just a seamless loop constantly. Really, really nice.
I think, having played it now, I feel like the guys who made this game probably have a real love for retro gaming and
100%.
You know, the SNES and the Mega Drive, because I got such a Castlevania feel.
Certain parts of it
were really Castlevania, like even collecting the orbs and hitting the things, which is really satisfying, by the way. That was really Castlevania-ish. I kept saying to you all throughout, I got real Strider vibes from it. If anyone's played Mega Drive, Strider, very similar. And what else did it remind us of? Sonic, even.
This is the other thing we're going to say, because like you look at the game and I think you think, like, yeah, Strider, you think Shinobi.
Yes.
Like the game, like I say, it's like, at the beginning anyway, it has a real 8-bit graphic look to it. So it's like 8-bit pixel art graphics. Like, it could look, on the face of it, if you just looked at still images of it, that could look on, it could exist on the Mega Drive.
Yeah, but it's beautiful.
Once you see it in motion, it couldn't, because it's way too smooth.
Definitely, but I got such a mishmash of different games like Sonic and Shinobi and that kind of thing, and I feel like they really captured the music of that time perfectly, but they made it really enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So the game, so like I say, you set off and you are trying to make your way to a place called the Tower of Time, because you want to get to the top of this this like mountain/tower to be able to deliver the message, because you are the messenger. So you've got this scroll that you have to deliver. You go through a series of environments, and the first half of the game, which is what we'll talk about first, is like a linear progression.
Yeah.
So you go through each level, there'll be a series of platforming/combat.
And you know which room you have to go into, because it's very obvious.
So it's a straight line, basically, but the trick is that you get this increasingly elaborate tool set of, you know, like the grappling hook and the, you know, all these different things that you get. And it reminded me a little bit, I don't think you've played Guacamelee, have you?
No.
We should probably play it, actually, because if you like this, you'd probably like Guacamelee.
Okay.
Because what it does is it gives you all these tools. I remember, like, sometimes I'd watch Min do it and be like, wow, that looks so complicated. I'm never going to be able to do that. And then you pick up the controller and it makes you feel so cool, because you will be, like, swinging and gliding across these levels, and you get, like, a wingsuit to glide as well. You'll be swinging and hitting and grappling hook and all doing these things across the level, moving really fast, feeling really awesome. Like, it makes you feel like I'm really good at this game.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can just zoom through it and be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to, like, stop for a second and think, okay, which tools can I use to get past this point?
Yeah.
And once you do it, it's really satisfying, because you're like, oh, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like the game as well, with a lot of the puzzles and stuff, it encourages you to overthink. Like, so you'll be going through the puzzles and you'll have these red herrings and you'll go like, oh, I've got a swing here and then grapple hook there and then jump across and hit this enemy and then use this other enemy to bounce off to get onto the wall. And then you can just jump up.
Definitely. I mean, you were probably watching me thinking, why the fuck is she doing that? And I certainly did it to you as well.
A sensation I'm used to be honest. Just generally.
Oh, you bitch.
Hello,
but no, I mean,
Jerry's
joined us. Obviously, it's easier to see sort of what's going on when you're the spectator. So
yeah.
Sometimes you'd be jumping and wall climbing and then hitting an enemy and bouncing off of it, and I'd be like, why didn't you just walk on that platform? And I'd do the same, because it's just, it's one of those games that make you overthink and panic.
Yeah.
And you just sometimes go for it. Or at times, you know, it'll make it look really daunting.
Yeah.
And really, all you have to do is run in a straight line, and as long as you time it right, you can just kind of walk through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it really does, like, it's like the game will give you all these really cool tools and you can use them all, but often, like you say, the trick is one thing I will say is the game definitely enjoys trolling the player.
Oh, yes.
Like, it enjoys making you do something and then go, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You could have just gone this way. And that is, to be fair, it didn't frustrate me. I always found it funny.
But yeah, because they didn't do it too many times where it got annoying, but yeah.
So for the first half of the game, you're sort of moving through. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear Jerry 2 purring. Let's just put the mic nearby. That is Jerry 2 enjoying the messenger talk. Are you enjoying it, Jerry? So for the first half of the game, you sort of move through the levels, deal with the platforms, deal with the combat, and eventually each of these sections has a boss at the end. And I think that this is probably, for me, where the game really shone. Because I think the boss fights, they weren't all perfect, and we'll get to a couple in particular later on that were frustrating. But
I think what they did do well, what went well, is that when you get, so they'll give you a new tool,
yeah,
and you get to use it in the level, and it kind of trains you. And then you'll get to the boss, and you sort of have to use that particular tool.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like boss fights, I can't remember who said this. I think it might have been Yats Crusher, I can't remember, who said that a boss fight should be like a final exam, where it's like, we've trained you in all this stuff, now you have to prove that you can do it in order to get past the next level.
It definitely felt like that on this one, because the bosses, you had to do different things. I mean, there was some where you had to wall grab, some where you had to bounce off of platforms and sort of double jump to stay afloat and that kind of thing. And I really enjoyed the fact that you had to put particular tools into action.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like it was really kind of a more old-fashioned kind of boss fight as well. Because, well, obviously the entire game was kind of old-fashioned, but it reminds me of, like, you know, often I'll play modern video games, and sometimes the boss fights are so shit. Like, I don't know if you remember, it's been a while since we played it, but do you remember Uncharted 1?
Oh, Drake's my Fortune, God, yeah.
Where the boss was just painful. It was just awful. And it's because a lot of modern games feel like they have to have a boss fight, but they don't really have anything for the boss to do. You know, it's just like, well, you know, if you play, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of a game, like Call of Duty, for example, what can the boss be other than someone you can shoot in the head and kill? You know what I mean? Whereas in this kind of game, the bosses are always, like, huge, they take up the entire space, or they're, like, little but have loads of phases, and it's that typical thing of, you have to learn the boss's patterns. Like, you watch the boss he'll have like 4 or 5 moves. The first time you fight him, he's going to kill you, or she's going to kill you almost immediately, because they're going to do something you didn't expect. Like, there was one particular boss later on where right at the start of the game, when your ninja clan is attacked, the Demon King summons like one of his like minions and says, right, make sure that this messenger doesn't get to the top of the mountain. And then later on, you have to fight him in a boss fight, and he has this attack that he does where he has like 3 flames on like a big stick that spin around really fast, and I think we got to it 3 or 4 times, and it just fucking annihilated us. And we're like, oh well, this is, how the hell are you supposed to dodge that? It's ridiculous. We can't dodge that. And then we just did it a few times, and we realized actually all you've got to do is run to the edge of the map, time it, and jump backwards, and you can get over it. And it's this thing of like, you're not just going to beat the boss through luck. You're not just going to beat the boss through hammering at it. You've got to. It's like, it's almost like a rhythm game. It's like you have to watch what the boss does and then react to it and learn. And each time you die, it doesn't really feel like a massive issue. It's not like, oh, fucking hell, I died. Oh, that's annoying. It's like, okay, I died, but I saw that the boss had this attack.
Yeah, and I got 2 seconds further than I did last time.
Yeah, and I saw that the boss had this devastating attack that we could dodge out, and like Min will do something and she'll die, but I go, oh, I didn't realise that you can dodge that way, or you could use the wall grab on this bit. If you can do that, you get a better angle.
Yeah.
So it's like the bosses are like something that you sort of hammer away at a little bit. In fact, it reminded me, I've always wanted to play Dark Souls and those kind of games. But we generally, we are quite shit at games, you know,
the two of
us are quite shit at games. But this game actually made me want to play them again, because I'd heard people say the same kind of thing about Dark Souls, that it's like, you die at a boss, but it's like, it's fine, that's part of the game, but each time you learn a little bit about it. Now, I'm not saying The Messenger is as hard as Dark Souls or anything, but it had that kind of experience with the boss fights of the boss does something, you learn a little bit more about it each time, and eventually you sort of attune yourself to the point where you've got this pattern and this rhythm down and you can get through it.
Because it's not impossible. Like, there is the thing with the bosses, there is always something that you can do to counteract it.
Yeah.
And it's just about sort of doing it a couple of times and watching someone else to figure it out. And it's really satisfying when you finally realise. I think what the game is good at doing is actually making you use the tools it gives. Because sometimes I feel like certain games can overload you with too many things that you can do.
Yeah.
And you end up just not doing any of them.
I know you haven't played them much of them, but the Assassin's Creed games are really bad for that. Where they'll give you like 30 different ways to kill someone.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where you'll choose the two that you like and you'll just forget about all the rest of them.
That's what I'm saying. Whereas in this game, it's like, no. You've got a handful of things that you learn and you need to put every single one of them to good use, and we're going to train you throughout the levels on how to master them.
Yeah.
Like, we were brilliant at using all of them.
By the end of it, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you get to the boss, it's like, okay, so you're going to have to use this, which you've been doing in this level, and then you're going to have to do the ones from the previous levels and make sure that you sort of time everything correctly and learn the boss. And it's really satisfying, especially when you get to the end of the fight, when you... there isn't a HP bar, so you don't know...
We should probably explain that, yeah.
But when the boss is close to dying, he or she or it will flash.
Yeah.
But that's when it tends to sort of go crazy.
Yeah, it intensifies, gets faster, introduces some new attacks. So, like, generally when we were attempting that boss fight, when we got to the point where we were about to where the boss started flashing, we'd be like, okay, we know we're onto it now. And it's kind of like a bit like a light at the end of the tunnel kind of moment. Because some of the bosses we really had to hammer away at, but it was like, oh, it's flashing now. We can do this.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, it would do some crazy attack and kill us immediately. And we'd be like, okay, that's fine. But we did get to that point. If we can get to that point again and survive a few seconds longer, we can then kind of try and figure out how to counteract it. So you just reminded me of one thing we probably should have said earlier. The one thing, a really cool mechanic in this game is you have health, which you can expand through upgrades. So the shopkeeper sells upgrades, like a skill tree kind of thing. And you can expand it through upgrades. But the one thing that's really cool is there's no life system, and I think it even says in the game, because the game is very meta in its dialogue.
Yeah, and it's very funny. Like, it's really well done. It's not cringe at all.
No, it's not cringe at all. And normally meta things can be really, really cringe, but this works really well. And I think this one part in the game, I think the first time you die, you're introduced to this character called, is it Quobble?
Quobble.
Who's like a little red demon thing that basically tells you that he's been assigned to you to make sure that you reach the Tower of Time, basically, to make sure that you deliver the message. And the deal is that when you die, he'll bring you back for free. So it takes you back to like the last checkpoint. But from now on, he's then going to collect some of the money that you find.
I could never figure out how that worked though. Did he eat a certain amount of diamonds?
I think, because it was an upgrade, if you remember, that reduced the amount that he ate. So basically what it meant was you'd start the game at the checkpoint, and maybe for the next few minutes, every single one of the diamonds that you collect that you use for upgrades, Quobble would eat them instead until he was satisfied, and then you'd start collecting them yourself. And what I really liked about that was, one thing that I fucking hate about old games, I think we went back and tried to play Super Mario World, on the mini SNES, and I think we didn't get that far in it, because life systems are bullshit. Like, the fact that you can run out of lives and have to go back and replay three levels that you've already done, no, that's just not fun. I don't know why anyone wants to just be set back like that, but no. This game doesn't have a life system. Apparently, I think the new game plus does, but for the sort of normal run through, the first run through, you don't have a life system, so you can die as many times as you want. And in fact, we died over 600 times.
I feel like it was more.
I think it was more as well. It was about 650, I think, by the end, but I'm pretty sure it didn't count it for one section, which we will get to later.
But it's funny because it makes dying a little less horrible. Because when you do die, Quobble on the loading screen has a little message for you.
Yeah.
And depending on how you die, you know, he'll have like a really quirky insult. So you might die on spikes and he'll be like, oh, pro tip, avoid the spikes. And it's like, yeah, fuck off, mate, I know.
There was actually one point where he says, there's a phobia, I think you should be aware of. It might be handy for you to develop. And he said the name of the phobia. It was like agoraphobia.
Yeah, and he was like, look it up.
And so I googled it and it was like fear of pointy objects.
Yeah, so he's very like sarcastic and you know, takes jabs at you for dying, but it's quite funny.
And I thought that'd get frustrating, but it doesn't really. It's always funny. You know, even when you've died 100 times in a row, it's still funny. But so there's no life system, so the death isn't really that punishing, and I think that's the thing that makes this game, like, even though it is difficult, it makes it sort of a lot more easy and palatable to get through, because you know that you die, it's fine, so try again. I remember Super Meat Boy having the same thing where it's like, yeah, you've died, that's fine, just go again. You immediately just go again. Yeah. Don't worry about it. It's not like you've been punished. It's not like you're going to have to restart everything. It's not like you're going to have a game over. It's just go again, go again, go again. And it means that you get to a problem, you can just sort of keep hammering away at it over and over again without having to delay it, or without having to think, oh shit, I've only got 2 lives left or whatever. So I did appreciate that. So yeah. So you make it through the boss fights. There's a series of boss fights at the start. I'd say the boss fights are, you know, we've sort of been very, very high in our praise of the boss fights. I'd say that there are a few that are less good. There's one in particular that I want to get to in a bit. But there's some of them that, like, it feels weird in that the most difficult boss fights for me feel like they're in the first half of the game. I don't know how you felt.
That might have been because we weren't fully upgraded.
That is true, but then the game developers need to do more to balance it, don't they? Because I think that the third to last boss and the last boss... No, sorry, the fourth to last boss and the last boss, I think we got through on the first or second attempt.
Yeah, I mean, one of them, you did him on the first attempt. Yeah. Or second attempt, something like that.
It was the first... One of them I did on the first attempt.
Yeah, and we were very shocked because I was like, oh, you're doing
At that
really
point,
well.
We thought that was the final boss as well. But it was. It turned out not to be. But yeah, like, so some of them are a little bit on the easy side. It's a bit inconsistent, really. Like, some of them are, like, alarmingly easy, and other ones are, like, punishingly hard.
Yeah.
And it does feel like some of the hardest boss fights are in the first half of the game, which is a little bit odd and a little bit unbalanced. But generally, I did enjoy every single one, bar one. So you're the messenger, you have to deliver this message, you are sort of getting over, going through these different areas, exploring the world, and it goes through the typical kind of, like, there's like a foresty sort of level, there's like an underwater level, there's a catacombs, which is the one that you referred to as being really Castlevania-y, even to the point where there's candles everywhere that you can hit and get crystals from.
That bit really reminded me of Castlevania, but then there was later on there's a bit where you're kind of sucked up into this thing that, like, shoots you out and you're in a ball, and it really reminded me of Sonic.
So there's a little bit later on in the game where it turns into like a sort of very garish sort of fairy kind of, it looks like a sort of like fairy forest,
like a fairy
kind of area,
forest flowery den,
and you can be shot into a little ball like Sonic. But
and the platforming was just so, if anyone's played, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic 2 on Mega Drive, got real vibes of that.
Yeah, you know, it was weird actually, because I think I said earlier, you wouldn't think that. You'd think Ninja Gaiden or you'd think Shinobi. But then when you've got like the swinging, like, wooden platforms
and
things.
Yeah, and then even like the bit where the water was like rising up and you had to beat it, and
yeah, definitely.
The disappearing ledges, and the bit where you'd hit the crystal and it would like transport you into a little dot and take you through tubes, that's Sonic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I appreciate the fact the game kind of wore its influences on its sleeve. Like, it wasn't trying to hide them, it was just kind of like open about it. So yeah, so you get through the world and you travel through the entire world, and then eventually you deliver the message to at the top of the Tower of Time, where you get to the Tower of Time and you find out that the shopkeeper, the one who's in the blue robes, is part of this order of blue robes people, the blue robe order, or blue robe society, I can't remember what they're called.
The order, I think it was.
And basically say, okay, you've got this far, but you need to pass this test, the Tower of Time trial, basically, in order to be able to, in order to be able to deliver the message properly. So you have to climb the Tower of Time, beat a boss, and then you find out, basically, at that point, I think we both thought, is the game ending now? And we thought, it's been about, what, like 6 hours, 7 hours, maybe? You know, for an indie game, whatever, it might be the end of the game. But you find out that that's only really the first half. You find out that's really only the first half of the game. And there we go. And the game kind of opens up both in terms of its narrative and in terms of the gameplay and the visuals and everything. So basically, the game has this really cool thing that reminded us, I think, of Evoland. If anyone's ever played Evoland, it's like a game that kind of changes gameplay styles and visual styles as you go through. So the game shifts between, you find out basically that you have the power to travel through time through this scroll, and the game shifts between like 8-bit, which is the past, and 16-bit, which is the future. So it actually changes in visuals, and you find out...
And the music changes slightly as well. It's the same sort of tune, yeah. But it sounds slightly less better in the 8-bit version. It's really cool.
But there's a really cool moment at the end of this first half of the game where you go to deliver the message and you end up going to the future and you turn up basically at an identical scene to the start of the game.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh my God, it's the Hero of the West. And they think that you are the Hero of the West. You've kind of realised you've travelled all the way around the world. And then you pass off the message to a new messenger and say, okay, you're the messenger now. Because you find out basically that the world is on a loop, that the world has been cursed to this loop that happens every, what did it say, 500 years or something? And that basically every generation or every society or something, there is someone who is the messenger and they deliver the message. And once they've delivered the message, they join the Blue Robe Society, pass on the message to someone else and train them up, and they become the messenger and they have to pass all through all these trials till they can join the Blue Robes. So you pass a trial, you become a Blue Robe member, and there's a little bit where you become the shopkeeper and you run the shop for a little while. But the person who you chose to be the messenger dies, and that kind of leaves everything like at a loop. Basically, it's like, oh shit, the loop's been going to be broken.
Which is a mistake, by the way. It was a very funny mistake on the part of another Blue Robe.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh shit, panic. So it's panic. Like, it's very funny.
Where's the messenger that you gave the message to? It's like, oh, he hasn't been back in a little bit. It's like, did you dispatch Quobble when he died? Because obviously you've got to do that within 10 seconds or he won't. Come back. And you're like, well, you didn't tell me to do that.
So funny. Oh shit.
Okay, one second. And they realise that, oh no, we might have fucked everything up here. We might have broken the loop. So basically you get taken through to the Blue Robe Society and they reveal to you that the world is cursed and that the curse revolves around this music box, and that if you can collect the notes to create a tune that can unlock this music box, you can lift the curse. And the game then becomes a Metroidvania game. So up until this point, it's been a linear platform action game in the style of like a Shinobi or in one of the early Castlevania games.
Mm.
And then suddenly it becomes a Metroidvania, and now the world opens up and you have like a hub with portals and you can travel to different parts of the world you've just gone through, but now you can sort of go back and play them back through in different time periods, so the platforming changes and things like that. Now, this is a point I feel that the game got worse.
Yeah, I'd agree, because the problem was the lack of direction.
Yeah, so you basically get told, okay, throughout the world, you've just spent the last 7 or 8 hours travelling through to get to this point. There are now going to be 7 or 8 musical notes. I think it's eight musical notes?
Think.
Yeah, that you have to find to create this this music that can unlock the music box. But the guidance you're given is literally like a riddle. He'll say, oh, in the land of, you know, in the land of trees, a small boy will be crying or something like that.
The riddles were pants, like, they did not help.
No, and you get very little direction. And the map, you get access to a map at this point. It turns out that the scroll you've been carrying this entire time has literally just been a map that you could have opened at any point to use. But the map you get isn't great, and it becomes basically a bit of a scavenger hunt. And it was a bit frustrating. I'm not going to lie, I'm not ashamed of this. We ended up using Google quite a lot to find where we had to go, because we'd go, right, well, I literally have no idea. So we'd get in the portal and it would drop us into one of the levels from earlier. And it'd be like, do we go left,
well,
do we go
I'm
right?
I'm glad we used a walkthrough at times, that point. Yeah. Well, we didn't use it completely, but at times we did, because we wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as we did, because we'd end up doing the same levels over and over again and not actually getting to the place we want, well, and just being frustrated. And the problem as well is that the game is designed for you to do the same levels over and over again.
Yeah, because at this point, so for example, when you first get the portal,
yeah,
the first thing you have to do is go through the portal and then go back to the ninja village where you first started, okay? Which means you play through the first level in reverse. Fine, okay? Yeah. But then you've got to then travel back through the level to come back. And then there's a bit later on where you have to... So there's a bit... So yeah, like I say, you've got to find these different musical notes, but there's also, you've got to solve these little sort of side quests to get them. So there's like a part where you have to get this amulet that you can then use to activate a staff that you can take you to a different area where a musical note is. But I didn't know we had to do that. So I travelled all the way through the catacombs level again. Okay, literally from start to finish. So I had to replay the entire level again from start to finish. And that was like not the first time I'd had to do that as well. So I replayed through the entire level from start to finish in order to get rescue this like little... these little like... I don't know how you describe them, little squirrel things.
I don't know if they're squirrel. They're just like little worker.
Yeah, you've got to rescue four of these workers across the world in order for them to build a bridge. So I went through all the way through the catacombs level, got through to the other side, rescued this little thing, and then realised that I had to then... that this amulet that I needed was in the sarcophagus of the boss that I'd beaten on the catacombs level. But because I'd already gone past it, I had to get into the portal and go back to the start of the catacombs level and play through the entire thing again to get to the end of it to get this amulet.
I feel like the route that the game made you take was really weird, because there were certain levels that we saw about four times, and they weren't enjoyable levels. They were really annoying bits. And it just got to the point where it was like a chore, and like, we're here again, doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Just flying through it. Definitely. And it was just a bit disappointing how much recycling there was with those kind of levels.
Yeah, definitely recycled. It made you... So when it became Castlevania, and it basically, like I say, you just have to go hunting through the levels you've already gone through. Right, but sometimes you're going through it in reverse. Sometimes it's slightly altered because like you're playing it through in the 16-bit version now rather than the 8-bit version. But none of it was enough to really justify having to go back and replay the levels you've already done. And it was don't get me wrong, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
But I think I said to you when we were getting towards the end, I think it would have been better if it was a little bit shorter.
Yeah, I just feel like it was a bit samey and a bit...
stretched.
It's a bit stretched, especially, having to go through the level three or four times to get to the same bits. And another thing that I did resent a little bit was the fact that in the first half of the game, there's these deceptive bits where it looks like you can slide down, and then when you do,
yes,
you die.
Yeah.
But then that rule... So it sort of... it teaches you, no, you can't go down there because you will die. So you're like, okay, fine. But then... like two rooms later, you have to slide down in this place that looks exactly identical to the one that you died in, that's the place that you have to go. So it's like, it's a bit cheeky.
One bit in particular that did that.
Yeah.
There's an area that has lots of sinking sands.
Oh,
and
gosh,
it establishes the first time you go through it that if you go into these sinking sands and you sink, you will die, right?
Yeah.
So when you go into it and you'll start to sink, but then you can sort of jump back up and then sort of get out of it. But if you stay in it, you'll sink to the bottom and you'll die. So we were like trying to find where we had to go. We knew that we were in the right area, the sinking sands area, but we couldn't figure out where this sort of tunnel was that led to the musical note. And it turned out that you had to sink down one of the sections of sand to get to it.
Very slowly sink down.
Yeah, but previously, if you'd sank in it, you died. So it's like, why all of a sudden would you be like, this one's going to be fine?
Because it's like, well, you've taught me that I can't do that. You can't then change your mind and then expect us to know.
Exactly, it was very frustrating. So the game certainly loses a little bit when it becomes a Metroidvania. I do appreciate the fact that they tried to do something different.
Yeah.
Like, you think it's going to be a straightforward action, side-scrolling action game, platformer, and then it's like, okay, we've done that now it's a Metroidvania, and I think it could have been a good Metroidvania. I think maybe if they did a Messenger 2, apparently they are doing a prequel, but it's like a turn-based RPG.
I would love to play that.
Yeah, definitely, it's called Sea of Stars. But if they'd done like a Messenger 2 and it was like in the same vein, I'd be okay with them doing a Metroidvania if they just kind of committed to that a bit more, because just to make you go through the same levels again and again. I know that's kind of what you do in Metroidvanias to an extent, but I don't feel like it was particularly well done. And I think that it would have been solved by having more portals and making it easier to travel in and out of levels, because you have like a sort of basic fast travel system in that you have these like...
I think.
8 or 9 portals that you can transport to, but they nowhere near give you enough coverage of the world. So there is quite a few times where it's like, okay, you need to go to... there's an area called Glacial Peaks, for example.
Yeah.
But to get there, you're going to have to go into a portal that's like... a good 15 minutes of platforming away to get to. So you have to go to that portal first and then platform all the way through it to get to it, and then go platform all the way back in reverse, and then you've got to go back again later on, so now you've got to go all the way there again. Like I said, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining too much, but it was just a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, it was a little bit tedious.
So basically, you collect all these musical notes, and eventually you end up going to the underworld and you fight the Demon King from the start of the game, who you assume is going to be the big baddie, he's going to be the final boss. But actually, I think that was the boss that I killed first time out. It was,
and I was so shocked. And
it was actually
very
really easy, yeah. So you beat the Demon King and you use his crown to travel through this other portal that's been hanging around, and there you get sent to this place which is called the Corrupted Future, where it kind of becomes this like Lovecraftian nightmare with eyes like poking out of like sort of viscera and things like that. Now, the reason I wanted to bring up this level was that this level was the point where it did get ridiculously punishing and difficult to the point where it stopped being fun for a while. And that's that you get to the end of this level, you find the musical note, and at that point you start being chased by, I don't know what it is, it's called the Abomination, but this huge squid looking motherfucker with eyes and things.
Yeah, and you know what, he was so unbelievably unforgiving. And I think the thing that annoyed both of us is that this is the first time in the game that this kind of enemy or boss appeared. And basically it's like a chase, and you have to run away from him, otherwise he will gobble you up. But the problem is if you do not have a perfect run, and we mean perfect, like you cannot make a single mistake, you're fucked. And it's quite long. It was like 2 minutes long, wasn't it?
So he chases you back through the level in reverse, slightly different. Yeah, like you say, it's like a good minute, maybe a minute and a bit.
Yeah, and a minute and a half.
And if you make it, it basically relies on, the only way that we managed to get through it was by just dying. I mean, more than 100 times.
I don't even want to think about how many times we did it. And again, we had the benefit of watching each other and being like, oh, right, okay, you did that, I'm going to do this. But it was ridiculous because you'd grapple onto something that would pull you forward, but it didn't actually, it didn't do anything in the chase, because the boss got to a point where if you were a certain sort of length away from him, from him, he'd just get faster and catch up to you anyways, and then sort of slow down and just be just behind you. But if you didn't grapple onto something quick enough, or if you jumped a little too soon, or didn't grab onto the wall where you had to, you died.
Yeah, exactly. And just to clarify, I mean, we literally did this 2 hours ago. I think we've just completed the game about an hour ago, and this was about 2 hours ago because it was the second to last level.
Yeah.
So the frustration is still probably deep within us at the moment, but it was literally,
it was just really annoying because we didn't have anything else like that in the game, and it came out of nowhere. We don't even know what it was. It was just so out of place.
Yeah, and it was like, the game hadn't relied on speed at any point, really. The game wasn't about speed. It was much more about patience, in fact. Like, the thing that the game teaches you is, if you try and rush, you're probably going to get killed. Even in the boss fights, it's like, if you try and rush and attack them as much as possible, the chances are you're going
to
get killed.
No, you
it's
have
much
to, like,
better
yeah.
to stop, study it, wait, see what, check the timing, so there'll be lots of times where there's like pipes blowing steam, you know, kind of typical stuff, and you got to wait and time your jumps. And all of a sudden, it's like, now on this level, this fucking abomination thing is going to chase you. You've got to be really fast, like, you can't stop for a second, because
if you
do get caught on a little bit of the environment for a second or whatever, you are dead. And it requires a perfect, perfect run to the point where
I watched you, there were some times where you were doing fine and just, I don't even know for what reason, he caught up to you and just munched you.
I must have not grabbed one of the ropes, because there's sort of things you can grapple up onto to speed you up. But it was just like, I said earlier that, you know, the final bosses should be like the final exam. But that was like, we hadn't been trained for that. We hadn't studied for that. We studied for patient, precise platforming, all that. We hadn't studied for run through as quick as you can. And if you make the slightest error, you are dead. I think it even got to the point during that boss, actually, where we've kind of like looked at each other and we were like, should we just fuck this off? This is getting to the point where it's really painful, but I'm really glad we pushed through it.
Yeah,
because
I'm
it
glad
was satisfying. It was satisfying when we completed it. And it did force you really to sort of get to the point where you were really finely tuned. But it was just
unnecessary and came out of the blue. But I think hearts did sink a little bit when we did it and we were like, this isn't the last boss.
Yeah, because that wasn't the last boss, was it? And the last boss turned out to be far easier. One more thing, actually, that I forgot to mention, really, about the bosses. One thing I really liked about the bosses was the sort of often the dialogue you'd have and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think the boss really early on, where it's like a big golem and you kill it. You destroy the golem, and there's like this little spirit thing living inside of it, and he goes, why did you destroy my golem? And you're like, well, you attacked me. He goes, I was just here digging holes.
And he made the point that you had come underground and you were the one who had kind of like disturbed it.
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, you know what? I think the character actually says, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
I didn't really understand.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, don't worry about it. It's fine. And he's like, no, really, I'm sorry. And he's like, no,
it's fine. Everyone makes mistakes.
So you leave, and then it just pans over to this little round spirit. And he like makes a really sad,
he starts crying, doesn't he? Yeah, because you destroyed his golem. And there's another part where you fight these like two buff idiot
like Orc Brothers or something.
Yeah, who are like obsessed with strength, I
yeah,
think.
And you fight them and they're like, oh, that was good, yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, that was really nice. And they just hang out and be your friends from then on.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so the bosses, like, yeah, they were full of character, apart from the Abomination, which was a cunt. So, yeah, so once you've got that, you've got the final musical note, you unlock this music box, and the game does something a bit weird at this point, where you finally get all the notes, and you kind of say, right, okay, what's going on then? What are we going to do? And the Blue Robes say, okay, you know what? You've done enough. We're going to explain what's happening. And they basically say, okay, we're going to explain the plot to you now. And for, like, what, 3 minutes, maybe? There's, like, very sort of Mega Drive era cutscene of, you know, like
the text and the strip still of images. Animation. Yeah.
Well, and it goes into some quite dense lore about, I'm not sure I remember it all, where it's like there was a race of giants living in the sky that looked over the earth, and two humans called Phantom and Muse that, yeah, I don't even know. Like, it goes into quite a lot of dense lore that just kind of dumps on you before the final boss, and then goes, anyway, yeah, that's what's going on. That was the plot. And then you go off to fight the final boss.
Yeah.
So it turns out this guy, Phantom, who was a partner of a woman called Muse. I think it implies Muse was killed, I think. And he, in rage, tries to go and kill the Demon Lord single-handedly. The Demon Lord captures him. And in order to punish him and humanity, he sets off this 500-year loop to torture humanity forever. Every 500 years, demons will attack and kill everyone. A messenger will... Well, yeah, demons will attack and kill everyone. And the Phantom will be... He's put inside this music box, which is like an heirloom of his lost love. He's put a mask on that tortures him, and he basically spends his entire life in this box, turning the music box to keep the music going, which also keeps the curse going and the loop going. But whilst he's in there, he has like brief flashes of sanity, and he uses that time to study demon magic, creates the scroll that is imbued with time magic, so to create time travel, which he then somehow smuggles out of the music box, I don't know how, that starts the loop off of the messengers. And the idea is, okay, we can't beat them unless we have all of time. So to do that, I'm going to create this scroll so that they can sort of gather an army of these messengers. So the people that are skilled enough to get through it and skilled enough to use the time magic can then go through this loop, train, go to this void of time and space, join the Blue Robes, and eventually amass like an army that can destroy the Demon Lords, something like that.
Something like
that. Yeah, it gets
that.
gets quite heavy, doesn't it? Kind of quite lore deep and strange. So yeah, anyway, so you travel through the music box, you eventually beat Phantom, so Phantom's kind of been driven mad by the torture and the pain and stuff like that, and being trapped in this music box. You fight him and kill him and you release him, and then that's kind of it, isn't it? Like, the game ends very, very suddenly.
Yeah.
It doesn't really explain what's going to happen now. You beat Phantom, you release him, you have like a sort of Super Saiyan moment where you beat the Demon Lord again, and then it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, credits, you're like, all right, oh, that's the end of it. And then it kind of implies that you're now the shopkeeper again, and there's now like a cowboy guy who's going to be the next messenger. So I thought the hint there that there was going to be like a messenger too, where the main character was a cowboy.
Yeah.
But it turns out they're not doing that. They're doing a prequel. That's an RPG, turn-based RPG.
Which I would genuinely want to
Called Sea of Stars. So yeah, apparently it was on Kickstarter and it made like 5 times its budget. So
good on him.
Yeah, so that'll be something we can enjoy in the future.
Yeah.
So like I say, when we do these podcasts, we have literally just played them. So we're kind of all buzzing with excitement about it. But have you got anything else you want to say about The Messenger?
There was another criticism, I guess. We managed to fill the skill tree pretty early on.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, good point.
And a big part of the game, which was satisfying, was collecting the diamonds, because you felt like you were working towards something.
Remember as well, that's the only punishment for death as well.
Yeah, and that's the only punishment, because Quabble will eat a certain amount of diamonds that you collect. But it got to a point where, okay, we've filled the skill tree, and we thought, okay, is this going to unlock something else? What can we spend these diamonds on anything else? And we ended up having like nearly 4,000 diamonds.
Yeah,
at the end, which is a lot, by the way. And because most of the things cost like 150 up, right, or something like that.
Something like that.
I think two of them cost 1,000 or 2,000, but the amount that we amassed at the end was a lot, and we didn't get to do anything with them. It just felt like such a waste, and there'd be times where we were platforming and we'd be like, well, there's no point in jumping on that because we've got all these diamonds.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, because we did fill up, like, you get skill tree, but the skill tree is fairly small. And at first we were like, oh, we'll prioritise these upgrades and stuff. Yeah. But by the end of it, we had all of them without
any real effort. And even when Corbel revived us and he was eating some of them, and I was like, the little shit, he's eating our diamonds.
We need that for upgrades. But
then once we'd finished
the skill tree. I'd say two-thirds of the way through the game, we filled it up. And at that point on, literally, the only thing you can do with the money is buy hints from the shopkeeper, but that
even then, it was kind of useless.
Yeah, so that you're right, that was a little bit...
Yeah. And also, did it ever mention... I don't know if you remember, but there was like a pink Corbel-looking creature. Do you remember that?
No. I don't remember that.
There was one, and then she kind of just disappeared. I'll Google it, but okay. I don't think it ever mentioned her again.
I don't remember it. But yeah, well, what I was going to say is that, like, I personally haven't really played anything like this, really, since I was a kid. The only thing I think I've played that is very similar is Shovel Knight. Have you played Shovel Knight?
No.
I think we should probably play Shovel Knight then, because it's very similar. But and generally, I'm not really into games like this, and also generally, like, and I it's a bit of a shame to say it, really, but we are kind of pussies a little bit when it comes to video games.
Yeah,
like,
we are.
We'll often play things on easy mode if it gets even a little bit hard.
And we didn't used to be like that, just to put it out there. Like, we used to be quite good.
Yeah, but we sort of got worse as we've gotten older. But I feel like this sort of touched into something that I haven't felt since I was a kid, which is like, no, I want to beat this. Like, I feel like I can.
It must be because of, like, how similar it was to Mega Drive.
Maybe. I think part of it is that it's not... I don't think it's ridiculously punishing. I think it's difficult, but it's not ridiculously punishing for most of the way through. You get a very
good sense of relief and... like, you feel like you've achieved something when you do it.
Maybe yeah, that definitely.
That's what was satisfying about it.
Gives you a really good sense of challenge. And like I say, it's like, you always see the light in the tunnel. The checkpoints are fairly regular, and the punishment for death isn't too steep. So it does feel like, yeah, I could, you know, it's a realistic thing to actually do.
Yeah.
I feel like it's made me want to try more harder games. Like I say, it's made me want to try Souls games. So we're actually going to try play Code Vein at some point and see how that goes. Because Code Vein's on Game Pass, and it's apparently I've heard it's quite a good entryway into Souls games. And it's made me want to go back and play some other, like, sort of difficult 2D platformers. Like, we've got a mini SNES, and I kind of want to go back and try the Castlevanias and stuff now. Because it's like, you know what, it's not the hardest in the world, but I feel like it's a good gateway into that kind of game. Like, we spent a lot of time recently playing games that are, you know, fun and not so good, but also quite easy.
We are definitely playing Strider and...
Yeah.
Shadow of the Beast.
I feel like that's really interesting because the game is obviously so inspired by loads and loads of different games.
Yeah, you know what? This is what I was going to say. You can tell that it's only a small team who've made it.
Yeah.
And they've put so much love into it, you can tell.
Yeah, so you can tell they're inspired by all this stuff. And I feel like it's interesting that they've put all these inspirations into it and all this effort into it. And that then has made us want to go back and play for all the inspirations and stuff. So I really, really loved it. I thought it was great. Really, we
played it solidly all day today.
Yeah, so we started playing it the other day, and then we sort of got really into it last night, and then today, from pretty much all day, we've been playing it from what,
make
like,
it sound like we don't do anything else.
Well, it's a weekend, but from like 11 in the morning until, well, about 10 at night.
Yeah.
Just solidly all day, apart from eating, I guess, and going to the shop and things like that. But yeah, if you've got Game Pass, I really, really, really recommend it. It is fun all the way through. I really genuinely loved it. So what do you think you're going to do in terms of score?
Before I give it a score, do you not have anything prepared for me?
Should we do that first? Okay, well, actually, yeah, you're probably right, actually, because before... But the thing is, I was a bit wary about doing it first because I didn't want to alter your opinions, really.
Okay, so do you think I should score first?
No, but I'll tell you what. Well, I think you'll resist it, okay?
Okay, okay.
So this is... Oh, I haven't thought of a name for it. The Messenger or the Messenshite. Okay? The Messenger or the Messenshite. A shite name for a shite quiz. So, I have gone on to Metacritic again, okay? And I've gotten some... quartz from Metacritic user reviews for The Messenger. Okay.
Okay.
These are for the Switch, Xbox and PC versions and PS4 as well. So I've got five here, and some of them are ones that I've taken from the user review section, and some of the ones are ones that I have made up. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to read you the the quote, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you the score, I'll tell you the name of the person that gave it, and you've got to say whether you think it is true or false. Do you understand?
I think I've got it.
Okay,
yeah.
It's very similar to FFA or FFS.
Okay.
Okay, similar style, subtly different though. Okay, first one. This is from Got a Point 20. Okay, Got a Point 20. They give it 7. And they said, "This game brought me to tears on several occasions, not because it was sad, but because I got a spike up my anus for the 100th time in 10 minutes." Is that true or false?
True.
That is false.
Oh,
I made
no.
up that. You know what? You should have known through the use of the word anus. You know how much I like the word anus.
Oh, God
yeah.
damn it.
If it said ass or anything like that, then maybe, but you let yourself down there. Okay, 2. All the fun I had with the game was overshadowed by a really frustrating final boss fight. I do not get why would developers want to torture gamers. At what point did they think mashing B button would be fun as a final challenge? I spent over 20 hours on the game and I am stuck at a stupid pointless point trying to mesh B. That's 0. And the person who wrote that is called I Hate Messenger. Is that true or false?
False.
That is true.
Wait, so they've got a problem with mashing B?
I don't understand what bit they're referring to. I think they may be referring to the abomination. Because listeners, you use B to rope to do the grappling hook.
Oh, okay, so but you don't mash it. You have to
run and then jump and then use a grappling hook to sort of get away from the monster. I think that's what they're referring to. What I really like about this is that his name is I Hate Messenger. So this has made him so angry, or she... it's made them so angry that they've decided they're going to go and use a Metacritic, create their own account, call it I Hate Messenger, just to leave this review. Because if they go on, you know, I don't know, Batman Arkham Asylum and leave a review as I Hate Messenger, it's going to be weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they've created an account just to hate this game. Okay, so that's 2. There's only 5 this time, okay? So that's 2 out of 5.
Oh, pressure's on.
Number 3. The game looks like it could have been made 20 years ago. Play Gears of War instead if you want a good game. Gears of War is an amazing series featuring some of the best action set pieces of all time and truly endearing characters. That's from GOW Lover 33. And they give it 0 out of 10. Is that true or false?
Okay, I'm going to say false. And my reason for that is because I think you, if I know you well, I think you've picked it because you know how much I hate that big, fat, meaty blockhead of his...
Ding, that's true.
Yeah.
No, it was false, but you got it right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Min, for some reason, I quite like Gears of War, and I tried to get... I was going to play court with Min, but she fucking hates the baked potato heads.
No, not like, bit. I mean, they are. So, his head is such a big, fat, fucking cuboid.
I don't know why that would stop you from playing a game, though.
No, I just don't know. I just don't like it. But okay. Yeah, I do know you well, Joe. So I knew.
So that's 1 out of 3.
Yeah.
Question 4. Spoiler alert, all capital letters. This game is basically the most tedious postman simulator of all time. Had more fun during my last prostate exam. 0. That was from Terry B5. True or false?
False.
Ding! You're right, it was false.
Yeah, I feel like there's a common theme here.
Okay, alright, we'll see.
Anus, so prostate.
Oh yeah, maybe I had something on my mind. So that's 2 out of 4. Okay, last one. Alright, this one's difficult. This is from Dennis Ferro, 10 out of 10. Jogo simplemente marvelloso, tal vez o mejor indie que lo jogo. Mas historia macara amo antensao especial ella espectacular dexamuto jogo AAA Commodore Poro simplemente jogo eso emo game de verde.
Was that spectacular in all caps?
Spectacular, yeah, it was.
I'm gonna say false.
That was true. Of course, it was true. That's from Dennis Ferro. Do you not recognise it? I mean, I thought everything he was saying was fantastic.
I mean, okay, the reason why I thought it was false because Joe spent the entire credit trying to pronounce every single name in a French accent and he read them out.
I did do that, yeah. Well, I know that is true. That is from Dennis Ferro.
Okay.
So you got 2 out of 5.
Ooh.
Oh, you failed. You did well at the messenger, completing the game, but
I love
well.
How the ones that you made up, though, mainly had ass.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about that. I think I might need to go and start staring myself in the mirror for a little bit. I don't know why I was so obsessed with anuses today. Anyway. Let's not delve any deeper into anuses. Okay, can we just put that out there? Let's not delve deeper into anuses, man.
But why?
I just don't want to delve. I don't want to get deep into anuses.
But why?
I'm not doing this podcast anymore. Okay, so score out of 100 then. So listeners, all four of you out there, will know that when we play and review a game for Jerry 2, we give it a score out of 100 and then we see what he gives it, okay? So, Min.
I am going to give it, because I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Although there were some annoyances.
There were some annoyances, yeah.
I felt like this game was made with a lot of love and care and attention.
Definitely.
The music was great. It was genuinely, for the most part, fun to play. It got a little bit repetitive, but we played it solidly without thinking about playing another game. So I'm going to give it an 88.
Wow, 88. High praise from Min. I think that I can definitely see that score. I think it is really, really, really fun. I got a lot of it, but there was... I do think the second half of the game did drag. Like, I feel like if it had started as a Castlevania in that vein, I don't think I would have been bothered about finishing it. But I think it was the first half of the game was so strong, and I did really enjoy the world and everything like that, that I think I'm going to give it 84. So I think that is an average of 86. So just to put it into context, listeners, so far out of the games reviewed, we've got My Friend Pedro right there at the bottom with 48, because of Min being a bitch. We've got Metro 2033 Redux at 71, The Messenger at 86, and Yakuza 0 at 99. However, it doesn't really matter what we think, because it's not our podcast. Jerry 2 has been sat patiently on my lap, purring away, listening to the conversation, soaking it all in. Jerry 2, what is your opinion on The Messenger? Oh, that is a spicy meatball from Jerry 2 there.
Ooh.
Jerry 2, I think, you know what, I think I can tell that he's been really into it.
He's gone all bushelled.
I don't know if you've noticed, yeah, but he has been bushelled quite a lot this last couple of days as he's been playing The Messenger. His tail has been very bushy, and he's been leaping from walls. He's been sliding down walls. He
jumped on Maisie, you know, multiple times.
He seems to think that Maisie is a boss fight. So his older sister, who's also a cat, obviously, Maisie, I think Jerry 2 sees her as a boss fight. He's been learning the patterns. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah.
But previously, Maisie was just able to take him completely out with like a sort of overhead swipe. So, you know, she'd sort of bring down the paw and Jerry would just be flat out, and he didn't seem to be able to handle it. But recently I've noticed he's been doing like a roll to get away from the swipe and smacking her on the side of the head.
Yeah.
And I think that if he carries on like that, I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, I've been noticing Maisie flashing. She's been flashing with damage. I think Jerry's almost there. Jerry, keep going. You will beat the boss, all right? And then you can be the boss cat. Well, anyway, that was our review of The Messenger. Now, very quickly before we go, I just want to recommend the podcast. So I've been trying to recommend a podcast at the end of every episode just because I love podcasts so much, and a lot of the podcasts that I listen to kind of I steal from for this podcast or inspire me.
I don't know
me.
Why Jerry's got his paw on your chest.
Jerry's giving me some support here. He's reached up and put his paw on my chest as I'm talking. Thank you, Jerry. Jerry understands how important podcasts are to me.
Yeah.
Like I say, I love podcasts, and I just want to shout out a podcast that I really like, so that if anyone is listening, you can go and check it out as well. So this week, this episode, should I say, I'm going to shout out the Daniel Kay's Let's Play podcast. I've been really enjoying that recently. So it's a guy, he's an Australian guy. He does it's very similar to the No One Can Know About This, which I shouted out last time, which is basically like he plays video games, but only records the audio. So it's just the audio of him playing it. I've been listening to his Pokemon Blue playthrough recently.
And that inspired you to play as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I sort of went back and started playing Pokemon Blue again because I was listening to it and it really got me in the mood for Pokemon. So he just plays it, enjoys it, you know, takes you through it. He's doing a Nuzlocke run on that. And I think he's just started another Nuzlocke run for Pokemon Silver. And it's just really fun. It's very funny and charming and endearing to listen to. So I definitely recommend Daniel Kay's Let's Play podcast as well. Okay. Any final thoughts? Any thoughts at all?
No.
At any point?
We forgot to mention there is free DLC for it, so we'll probably be playing that.
We're going to play that tomorrow. So there is there's an orb in a shop, and in the shop, and you go up to it, and he's like, "Oh, what's this orb?" And he's like, "Oh, it's a portal. It takes you to the tropical world."
Like,
"Oh, can I go there?" He goes, "Well, no, you got to go download the DLC first." We've done that.
No extra thoughts. You know, very glad that they made this game. It was very fun.
Yeah.
Jerry says, "If you meet him on the street corner of where was it? Birmingham. He will pass you a scroll.
The one street corner of Birmingham.
That one street corner. You'll know which one.
If you don't know which one, you're not the chosen one. So it's not your chance.
But if you are the chosen one, come equipped with a fish stick.
Yeah.
Said to come equipped with two fish sticks. He'll give you the scroll, and he's also going to give you a bin bag. It may meow every now and then, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, and what he wants you to do is he wants you to go on an epic adventure to deliver the bin bag to this epic fantasy place called The Dump. Okay, so you got to go deliver this meowing bin bag that may or may not have his sister in it and deliver it to The Dump, okay? If anyone wants to take up on that challenge and you think you are the chosen one, go to the one street corner in Birmingham. Okay, you know which one.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for listening to our ramble review, I guess, of The Messenger. Hope you enjoyed it. If you want to contact the show to tell Min that she's wrong about anything she said today about The Messenger, you can contact us at jerry2podcast@outlook.com. Or if you do want to praise me about anything I've said as well, same place to do that. You can also follow us on Twitter at... well, just type in Jerry2's Video Gaming Podcast and I'm sure you'll find it. So yeah, thank you for listening and goodbye. Good bows.